The great outdoors, Jake. Forget it, Jake. It's Los Angeles. It's the first time anybody's ever used that line, I'm sure. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
I feel like you made a movie reference that I don't get.
Chinatown. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Okay. What movie is that from?
Chinatown.
Oh, that's the name of the movie. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. All right.
Yes.
Well, I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this Wednesday, where we're already getting smart about things, assuming that not the entire rest of the world knew that except for me. Anyway, it's October 11th, and welcome to the show.
We're going to do some news, a little movie trivia every now and then, and then we'll do some smiles. So let us begin, shall we?
Why don't you go first, since it's very close to all of us.
All right. Yeah, so it was. I was interested to see this today. So, first of all, Twitter continues to self-immolate or be immolated by its owner. People are leaving in droves, especially after the events of this past weekend and the misinformation and just the horrible stuff that's going on there. But
for people who have actively left the platform, do you mind explaining what went down this weekend?
Well, there was just tons of disinformation and misinformation about what happened in the Middle East. There were really grotesque distortions of fact. Elon Musk, who owns that company, was promoting anti-Semitic sites as reliable sources of information. It was really bad. It was terrible. And it's my sense that the move off of Twitter to either Threads or Blue Sky or Mastodon or what have you has picked up in the last like 96 hours. That's my general sense. I have no quantifying data on that, but that's my sense. Anyway, so 6 months ago, NPR left Twitter after the site branded or labeled it as state-controlled media. Mm-hmm. And the people running NPR said, well, screw it. We're not, and we don't need this, so we're leaving. And of course, there was some wailing and gnashing of teeth because people both inside and to some degree outside public radio were like, well, what about, you know, traffic to your content? Don't you use Twitter links to get traffic to your content? And I confess, while not one of those wailing and gnashing teeth, that's what I had always thought, that Twitter engagement provokes engagement to actual editorial content. Turns out that is not true. NPR has done a survey, and it was published today in a thing called Neiman Reports, which is a thing that covers a publication that covers journalism and issues mm-hmm. surrounding it. Here's the quote: a memo circulated to NPR staff says traffic has dropped by only a single percentage point as a result of leaving Twitter, though traffic from the platform was already small and accounted for just under 2% of traffic before the posting stopped. That is kind of amazing. And it's, you know, good news, too.
Yeah, especially since we left, too.
right. You know, as I mean, an organization. Lots of other places did,
yeah.
too. Yeah.
You know, this confirms, you know, something I think with zero data to back it up. I always kind of suspected that Twitter was better for individuals than for companies in terms of building your individual brand. So it... like there were a lot of people who were Twitter famous, and remember, I don't know if you remember Clout, that one website for a while.
Oh, sure.
People got jobs based on how popular they were on Twitter. And so I think if you were to look at sort of the metrics for engagement for individual, say, NPR reporters, it mm-hmm. probably matters a lot mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, their own professional sort of notoriety. But I completely understand, like, how it doesn't do a lot for the traffic. Where does most of their traffic come through at this point?
I didn't read the article long enough to figure that out. I just saw the whole thing. I'm sure it's in there somehow.
Yeah, I mean, this was sort of it's sort of like the pivot to video thing. And this is the thing with all these social media platforms. It's like, we just don't know, and there's so many of them. I think media is always trying and experimenting to see, you know, what spaghetti hits sticks to the wall and stuff like that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's it. It's really interesting.
Yeah, super interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. What do you got?
Mine is something that came to me as I've been watching all the coverage of the FTX Sam Bankman-Fried trial.
Mm-hmm.
And today was the second day of testimony for Caroline Ellison, who was a top advisor and ran Alameda Research and on again, off again partner to Sam Bankman-Fried. And some of her testimony today was pretty bad about all the lies that they were doing and all of the sort of toxic environment that they were all working in, and some of the what sounds like, you know, emotional abuse in that relationship. And it just, you know, reminded me of all of the warnings I got from my parents growing up about being careful, like who you date and who you end up in a relationship with. And I have to imagine that she's sitting there and wondering, and probably has, you know, if not for sort of getting emotionally tied to this dude, would she be going to jail, you know? And lots of bad choices and made choices to break the law, but a lot of us do really dumb stuff in relationships.
Yes,
and choosing who you're going to partner up with, you know, has so many repercussions. It's sort of like that thing where they say, you know, don't marry anyone you wouldn't run a business with. And this is sort of the epitome of that. And, you know, I was just, it's interesting to think of it from a relationship perspective, just watching not just the company collapse, but your relationship collapse and your life collapse.
Totally.
And yeah.
Totally.
That's all. I was
just pondering it. It's just gotta be horrible. Yep.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, Jake, let us move on. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I've been getting press releases about this for a while, but it's getting into the zeitgeist now. So there's this group of companies that make menstrual products, particularly like the reusable ones, like the menstrual cups and the, you know, reusable period underwear and all of these things, or even sort of the organic tampons and maxi pads and things like that. There are lots of states where you have to pay sales tax on menstrual products, whereas you don't have to pay them on other health products. And there's been a lot of pushback on this over the years. And, you know, I'm looking at my home state of Missouri, you end up paying 9.6% tax. So this coalition of menstrual product companies has gotten together to do this tampon tax back effort, where if you buy these products and you have to pay a sales tax on it, you can send them a screenshot or you can send them a photo of your receipt and they will pay you back the taxes that you paid on those products as a way to sort of drum up attention to the, you know, fact that this is a healthcare product that is taxed like a luxury product. So I thought that made me smile a little bit. This has been an effort that people have been pushing for quite a bit. There's a law that lots of folks are trying to get passed to stop this from happening at the state level and at the federal level. So that made me smile a little bit because, like, go girls and people who use period products.
For sure.
Who are not girls.
And the idea that they get taxed specially is just kind of wild.
It is indeed.
It's kind of wild.
What made you smile?
Okay. So, there's an asteroid, bits of which have come back to Earth. So, this was like a couple of weeks ago, this asteroid Bennu, on which we didn't quite land, but we got samples from. And anyway, it's back to Earth. We now have pictures of the containment vessel of the thing that's bringing back the samples. But also, there was so much of that stuff, the dirt and the rocks and the grit, blown up while it was getting its sample, because they like puff some nitrogen down into the asteroid to get this sample stuff, that it like overfilled the container and like jammed the lid. So when they opened the container in the laboratory, some of it was sitting there outside the actual sample vessel itself, right? They had wrapped it up. They had arranged for it to be sealed, right? So that when they brought it back, it would be sterile and clean. Anyway, some was like on top of the thing. It was on top of the lid. Now, it just kind of looks like dirt and rocks, but it's crazy that it's from an asteroid. Hello.
It's pretty wild.
Are you kidding me?
It's
wild. So cool. They found water molecules trapped in some of those clay minerals. It's just amazing. There's sulfur in there. There's iron oxide. It's just kind of wild. Also, by the way, which I had not realized. Sorry, scrolling. So this thing is about as wide as the Empire State Building is tall, first of all. But
the
also,
asteroid itself?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not the container, the asteroid itself. It's called Bennu. But it is categorized as a near-Earth asteroid, and scientists say there is a 1 in 1,750 chance it could slam into Earth during a series of very close passes between the years 2175 and 2199.
That is not a small chance.
It is like, not a small chance.
That's better than the Powerball.
And while it is far away, 2175. That's right. That's right. It's way better than your odds of winning the Powerball. That's right. And I'm counting on winning the Powerball. That's exactly right.
You know, I've never bought a lottery ticket in my life, but I am seriously considering
it for this one. Come on. It's like $2 billion now.
I know. I need to go down to the grocery store. The last time it got this big, I actually did attempt to buy a ticket, and I learned at that point that you can't buy a lottery ticket with a credit card, which I did not know was a thing, but that makes sense for gambling. But like, I was just like,
yeah, I guess
the lady in the grocery store just looked at me like, you clearly haven't done this before. And I'm like, no, I haven't. Anyway, I'm sorry. Oh, asteroids. God. So the odds of it hitting the planet.
Anyway, so this thing is back. We've got samples, and they're going to do some more analysis. But you should check out this picture. We'll put it on the show page because it's cool. It's cool. It's like literally rocks, right?
Yeah.
It's just cool.
That's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I think so too. There we go. That's it.
All right. Short and sweet today. That is it for us. And we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to play some audio and chat about it. And you're welcome to send us any audio clips that jumped out to you this week that you think we should discuss. Send it over to us, or your questions, comments, your answers to the Make Me Smart questions. It is 508-UB-SMART is the phone number where you can reach us. We also have an email, makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Make Me Smart, which is the podcast you are listening to, for which we are grateful, is produced by Courtney Berg. Seeger Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Today's program is engineered by Jake Cherry. Our intern is Niloufar Shabandi.
Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez wrote our theme music. Our senior producer is Marissa Cabrera. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
Boom. Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.